evening, I would like us to observe a moment of silence for prayer or meditation. Shall we bow our heads? Thank you. Well, honorable members, I'd like to extend my greetings to you and to our support staff. I'd also like to extend my greetings to National Treasury. Is National Treasury here? I know that they were expected to be here. It's fine. We'll acknowledge them when they walk in here. But also I'd like to extend my greetings to the delegation from SAGA. SAGA, thank you very much for coming. And I'm sure by now you know that you are one of our critical stakeholders. So thank you. So more importantly, warm welcome and greetings to our esteemed guests. I know we have people from, you know, the broader community also having shown interest, and they are here with us. So thank you very much. Feel at home. This is our meeting. The main objective of today's meeting is to receive SALGA's response to the 2018 MTBPS. SALGA's response. The response is in relation to the extent to which they respond to local government issues. In terms of the Money Bills Act, SALGA is an important stakeholder in our budget process. The discussion about the MTBPS in relation to local government is very critical, because local government is almost like the face of government. It is at a service delivery point. So that is why then the SALGA becomes, response to MTBPS becomes critical. South Africans look to local government for basic services. And local government withstands the worst of people's frustration when services fall below expectations. High unemployment often means extra demand for service or for services, but lesser revenue for municipal services. So as we are gathered here this morning, unemployment has risen from 27.2% to 27.5%, which means 6.2 million South Africans are now unemployed. This puts more pressure on municipal finances. So, honourable members, let us then allow SALGA to present to us, and we must then listen carefully and reflect on these realities as we engage with the presentation from SALGA. So, once more, you are welcome. When I came in here this morning, I strongly felt that God has given us another chance to be productive. So let's make use of this opportunity and be productive. Make an impact in our work so that there can be an impact on God's people that we are serving. Thank you very much. So we will then hand over to SALGA to, excuse me, let's start with the apologies. Are there any apologies?
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members and guests. We received 4 apologies for today's meeting. The first one is from Mr. Shackleton. Second one is from Mr. Paulson, who is on organizational duties. Ms. Sopesitole is still not well, and then Mr. Sheikh Imam also apologized. Thank you, Chair.
What about Sheikh Imam?
He apologized.
Okay. What's the reason? Because remember, we need to know the reason before we can accept. Okay. That's fine. All right, members. There are the... Okay, here are the apologies. Do we accept the apologies?
Yes.
Apologies accepted. All right, thank you very much. Shall we then proceed to item number 3, which is presentation by Falga. Falga's presentation was circulated for members to peruse through as they were preparing to come to this meeting. So today we will then give Falga the opportunity to talk to us on their response to the 2018 MTPPS. Over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for the opportunity. My name is Charles Begumza Stofile. I am a councillor and a member of the National Executive Committee of SALGA. The presentation is going to be presented by Mr. Mohan Ahmed, who is responsible in that unit, and then we'll then interact with the presentation and take questions and engagement. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and good morning to all the honourable members of the committee, and to Councillor Sofile and all other people present as well. I'm going to take you through the presentation. It's not a very long presentation. We've got basically 11 slides with information, and the first two of the slides actually is just some detailed information at a very high level regarding the macroeconomic climate in the country. And in the remaining other 9 slides, is actually we will go into the meat of what SALGA would like to share with the actual committee in terms of the local government perspective on the medium-term budget policy statement. So, to start, in terms of the actual macroeconomic climate we find ourselves in, as the Chair has alluded to at the beginning of the session, we understand that we're currently in a bit of a difficult economic situation, and employment has increased. The growth forecast for the country has been revised downwards again, and even the global outlook is also not that positive. It's quite negative at the moment as well. So some of the other issues that we've picked up also is that despite the tax increase or the increase in the VAT rate, SARS again in this coming financial year is expecting a deficit in terms of, or a shortfall in terms of the revenue collection. Due to the number of factors. Part of these is basically backlogs with regards to VAT refunds, underestimations of refunds for income tax, and also slower income corporate income tax collections as well. And part of the impact of these things is that government borrowings are expected to increase over the medium term. However, government has made it very clear that they want to maintain the debt ceiling as far as possible, and they want to come to a point in 2023 or so where the maximum debt-to-GDP ratio is at 59.6 to 60% in total. So the other thing we just need to talk about is the other issue is on the next slide about the key priority areas. The MTPPS had effectively 3 key priority areas. So the first one was the issue of implementing the economic stimulus and recovery plan launched by the President of the country in September. And with regards to this specifically, obviously we understand that the economy is in a bit of stagnation, so we need to give it a kickstart and we need to reinvigorate the economy. So efforts are being made to actually improve existing infrastructure spending, trying to create jobs, looking at investments into the country. And obviously the investment summit that the President held recently as well are all efforts that are basically aimed towards trying to get the economy kickstarted. Obviously, we've got to create jobs, and the only way to create jobs is we've got to have investment in the country in terms of industry and production as well. So that is the first sort of key priority or focus in the MTPPS. The other one was the issue of improving governance and financial management at all levels of government. And obviously, we are focusing on the issue of local government in today's session. But I think just broadly, in all levels of government, we definitely need improvements in governance and financial management itself. And one of the key areas we know when the Auditor General does his report is he normally reports on the issue of the unauthorized irregular structures in resource expenditure. And obviously that needs to be limited and reduced significantly. Also the issue of capacity in local government and public sector at large needs to be considered. And the issue of a framework for more efficient procurement
and financial recovery of non-performing state departments needs to be considered as well. And the last one was the issue regarding the reforming of state-owned enterprises and the improvement of their financial health. So as you all know, the SOEs are currently, in many cases, many of them are actually putting a drain on the fiscus. The intention of SOEs was that they would be self-sustainable, but unfortunately, over the last number of years, it hasn't been the case, and a number of them require bailouts, etc., from government as well. So if you move on to the next slide, the point I want to see is what does this MTBPS then hold for local government in terms of the division of revenue and the local government equitable share specifically in terms of the allocations to local government. So over the medium term, in terms of the allocation to the different spheres of government, in terms of the MTBPS, 48.1% will be going to national departments, 42.9% to provinces, and 9% to local government. And over this period, the resources of national government grew by 7%, provincial by 7.2%, and local government resources by 7.2% as well. Effectively, over the medium-term expenditure framework period, 415.5 billion rand will be transferred to local government, including 146.3 billion rand in infrastructure conditional grants. So just quickly pause on that point. Obviously, members would know, but just for clarity again, the 146.3 billion rand as conditional grant is specific to the issue of infrastructure development. The difference between that and the 415 billion, which is approximately 350 billion, that is for equitable share, and that is for the provision of free basic services by municipalities. And in terms of how the equitable share is going to be growing, over the medium term, it will grow by 9.9% in the year 2019-2020, 9.7% in the next year, and 8.6% in the outer year, 21-22. These increases are above inflation. However, it's worth noting that the base from which these increases are coming through is from a very, very low base. And hence, the need for it to actually have these above inflation increases so that the capacity or the funding gap can actually be narrowed in terms of that. So what this actually entails, if you look at the allocation to local government versus provincial government and national government, is that the distribution of the actual fiscus is not adequate in terms of distribution to local government versus the other spheres of government. The other point I wanted to raise is that one of the things that comes about when we have discussions with Treasury and other stakeholders is they normally mention that the actual true equitable share that is actually provided to a local government, you've got to factor in what is their revenue generating capacity. And according to what they mentioned in terms of those discussions, is that the true equitable share after adjusting for revenue is approximately 28%. Now we are saying that could be the case in terms of how they're working out those numbers, but in terms of the numbers at our disposal, the figures after adjusting for local revenue is more between 19.5% to 22%. It's also worth to point out further as well that many of these revenue-raising assumptions or revenue-generating assumptions that are used in terms of determining these percentages are not always attainable in local government environment due to a number of factors, part of them being the economic situation, part of them being a culture of non-payment, part of them sometimes being to also poor financial management as well. But generally, those revenue-raising assumptions are not always attainable. And hence, to actually consider the 28% or 22% is not always realistic and always advisable as well. The last point I want to make is a somewhat contentious point, but it's a point that's worth noting. The role of the bulk suppliers also has an impact in undermining the revenue collection needs of municipalities. And what we're talking about here specifically, to be very specific, is with regards to the issue of electricity supply. So there are situations where in a municipal area, ESCOM will supply directly to some customers and the municipality will supply to the other customers in the municipal area. The area that ESCOM supplies directly to, the municipality is still responsible to supply the other services such as water, sanitation and refuse. And what happens in most cases is areas that are directly regulated by ESCOM, the revenue collection rates of municipalities in those areas are very poor to zero. So the collection rates are actually very much poor compared to the areas where the municipalities reticulate electricity as well. Reason being, electricity is a leverage for credit control. And the other services, you can't really cut off water. And the other services, you can't really, there is no leverage from a credit control mechanism if you don't have electricity from there. So it's a point to be raising. It's also a matter that has been taken up with ESCOM together with Interministerial Task Team on Electricity regarding the whole issue of electricity reticulation in the country as well. Then going on to the next point, what we wanted to just raise is that the issue of the cost of providing basic municipal services, there was a study done and conducted by SALGA and the FFC, and in that joint study, we picked up three areas that we want to point out. So the one area I want to raise is that in the different service categories, be it electricity, water, sewage, and refuse, the actual cost of the service delivery is much higher than the estimates used for the purpose of calculating the equitable share. So what we are saying here is that you provide a basket of services, free basic services as we call it, to households, and when Treasury determines the cost of that basket of services in terms of the norms of what's provided for in terms of free, they basically give us a budget times the number of households that should be getting it, and that's how the equitable share is determined. What the study found is that the actual cost estimates used by Treasury in determining those estimates are much lower than the actual cost of providing those services. And the reason why we're raising it is that the costs are not consistent. So obviously, depending where you are in the country, based on your topography, based on your spatial configurations, there are differences in different areas. So it can't be a one-size-fits-all. So this is the one point. The other point is, what the study found is that the issue of the renewal and maintenance of existing infrastructure is well below what is required. And what is happening is this is manifesting itself on an annual basis. When the Auditor General does the annual audit, they have a reporting item which they look at, which is called the issue of technical losses, in terms of technical losses of electricity and technical losses of water. What this effectively means, members, is that if a municipality is buying X amount of electricity or water, a percentage of it is leaking out in the system, and the major reason for that is because of the actual, in terms of the state of the infrastructure, because of being maintained and adequately maintained and renewed, is now resulting in leakages. This also has a direct impact in terms of the viability of the municipalities, because obviously the electricity and water loss is a direct loss. You can't recover it again, and you can't sell it as well. But you're going to pay ESCOM and the water boards for those things anyway. Then the last point is the issue of the administrative cost burden, which is quite high in a municipality. And what I'm trying to see in terms of this specifically is that the administrative cost comes about by and large for a variety of reasons. One of them being the compliance burden that municipalities have to face. So in order for them to basically comply with the requirements, the legislation in terms of reporting, etc., they've got to have the administrative capacity, and that puts a burden in terms of that on the municipality. And then the other point, which we'll also raise a little bit later towards the end of the presentation, is also the cost of reforms. There has been a number of reforms, and local government has been beset by a continuous reform agenda. So instead of allowing the local government sphere to settle in terms of a financial management regime, there seems to be constant reforms that are being introduced by Treasury and other stakeholders. And unfortunately, because of these reforms that are coming through, the municipalities have to comply, because non-compliance in many cases will result in certain punitive measures like the withholding of equitable share and other punitive measures that can be applied to them. So these things have an impact as well in terms of the actual cost factors that drive a municipality. Then on the next slide, we want to actually talk about the issue that SALGA does acknowledge that there is financial administrative problems in a number of municipalities, and that has contributed to the underspending or inappropriate use of equitable share and conditional grants in local government. But what we're saying is this also underscores the importance of innovation in the equitable share framework to create a framework that is based on a differentiated system of incentives for desired outcomes, rather than rigid enforcement of a business model that appears to have more failures than successes. And also currently, it seems to be more of a carrot and a stick approach, rather than using this as a mechanism to promote good practices in municipalities. The other point I want to raise is that we are also aware and mindful of the fact that there is no perfect solution for division of revenue, and at any point in time, we're never going to have all municipalities happy. Yeah, that's just the reality we have to face. But the point we wanted to raise here is that as long as local government, by and large, is getting a fair slice of the pie, and the way it's distributed to them, so we have to look at it in terms of the quantum and also the allocation. And currently, in both aspects, we seem to be falling short. So the redistributive effect as well of the equitable share needs to be considered, because there are obviously municipalities who have a greater need than other municipalities, and we need to make sure that those who have the greater need get the greater slice of the equitable share as well. And then the last point is that the equitable share, it's the same point we're raising, is that we need to consider whether the equitable share gap is actually going to be covered adequately. And as you mentioned, the part of it is the quantum and the redistributive effect of the equitable share itself. But as you mentioned, the point regarding the FFC study, which looks at the actual cost of providing the services, the ability of local government to raise revenue to provide services to poor households, and the true extent of the funding gap, needs to all be considered holistically when reviewing the local government equitable share. So from a SAGA perspective, what we've done is we've commissioned research to investigate these issues in more detail, and we hope that the study will be, or not we hope, it is planned that the study will be concluded by the end of SAGA's financial year, which is March 2019, and based on that study, we will then obviously be able to get further unpack what are the impacts of these issues, and also look at potential recommendations as how we can actually deal with some of these issues to make sure that the local government equitable share, in terms of recommendations to Treasury and other stakeholders, as to how can we make sure that the quantum and the distributive effect is actually dealing with what it's supposed to deal with adequately. Okay, then if you move on to the next slide, in terms of the MPBPS, there were three grants specifically mentioned in the minister's speech with regards to local government, and these three grants that they're proposing changes to is the one is the integrated urban development grant. The urban development grant is basically linked to the human settlements grant that used to be there, or the urban settlement development grant that used to be there. So this grant will be introduced in the 2019-2020 financial year. There is already two municipalities which are being piloted for this grant. The one is in the northwest, and I think the other one is in the Eastern Cape, if I'm not mistaken. And from there, 29 municipalities have applied to participate in this grant in the 2019-2020 financial year, and 7 municipalities in 5 provinces have been recommended to participate by National Treasury. If this grant proves successful, then SAGA basically urges an accelerated rollout of the grant to other participants and an increased incentive to be offered as incentive for positive performance of the grant. From a SAGA perspective, we welcome this grant because we feel it will give the municipalities the opportunity to actually do their own integrated urban development and actually be able to drive it themselves rather than be having to report to provincial government, etc., in terms of those specific urban development matters in the municipal area. The next one is the issue of the informal settlement upgrading. Here again, SAGA welcomes this grant. Currently, the USDG grants require 50% of the grant to be spent on informal settlements upgrading, but this is not delivering the appropriate impact at scale. So we feel by having a specific grant regarding the issue of informal settlement upgrading, it will actually drive the right behavior and it will actually assist in getting informal settlements to be upgraded. And again, SAGA wants to actually urge National Treasury to consider this as a separate autonomous grant, not as part of the actual USDG. And then the other point that we may also raise is that electrification is key to informal settlement upgrading, and it is imperative that the INEP grant or the INEP funds to metros be also included into the USDG grant to better enable integrated planning. So again, we welcome this informal settlement upgrading grant as well. And the last one that we talked about is something called a municipal turnaround allocation. So in the 2018-2019 financial year, it's been widely reported 130 municipalities adopted unfunded budgets, up from 83 in the previous financial year. So obviously it means that the municipalities are planning to spend money that they may not have. But it's not as always as simple as that, but in a nutshell, that's what it means. And they also say that municipalities also owe more than 23 billion rand in arrears to Eskom and water boards. And obviously, the primary responsibility to deal with these matters is the municipality itself. However, it's important to note that when a municipality cannot be able to deal with the matters themselves, the Constitution and the MFMA allows for the provincial government and the national government to then intervene and to assist. However, we also know that interventions in the past, be it Section 139 or Section 154, have not actually succeeded in providing an appropriate turnaround to municipalities. So what government is now proposing is a reallocation of resources to enable national and provincial treasuries to better manage interventions. This will strengthen the National Treasury's Municipal Finance Recovery Service, which prepares the financial recovery plans for municipalities. And again, we welcome this allocation. However, the point we want to also make is that it's important that national and provincial government do not forget that before intervention has to be support. So as long as the support is provided proactively and on a consistent basis, we're hoping that it will result in less need for interventions in municipalities, because the support they would have got will hopefully be able to address the issues in a more appropriate or more proactive fashion, rather than having an intervention which is more reactive in nature. Okay, then over to the next slide. We want to just mention the issue of the issue of municipal borrowing. As we mentioned, that government as a whole will require borrowing to increase. In terms of real terms, municipal borrowing grew by only 9.2%. between the 1996-1997 financial year to the 2017-2018 financial year. Municipal data or borrowing data shows that municipalities are very cautious when it comes to the issue of borrowing. And the bulk of borrowing that happens in the local government sector or sphere happens at the metro level, because they have the balance sheets to be able to access funding and borrowing at a greater extent. And they've also got the mega projects that basically require the borrowings as well. So SALGA acknowledges that there is an untapped credit market for viable borrowers. And we also welcome the revised municipal borrowing framework that Treasury has initiated and issued to regulate borrowings. But what we're saying is that we also need for smaller municipalities to be able to tap into this borrowing market, and also to be able to tap into alternative funding sources for infrastructure development as well. So smaller municipalities must be assisted to reflect financial positions and performance to be regarded as creditworthy by lenders. So we need to also work to ensure that financial management is improved in these smaller municipalities, so that when they are applying for credit, they have balance sheets that are basically viable and will be able to stand credit worthiness assessments by borrowing entities, be it banks or development agencies as well. The next point is the issue of revenue collection and debt owed to municipalities. The gesture of deployment of revenue collection experts to municipalities was welcomed by SALGA as well. Also, the deployment of the engineers to assist the municipalities as well is also something that we welcome. We know that in terms of the reports that currently that we have, the latest Section 71 reports, the amount owed to municipalities in terms of consumer debt amount to 143 billion rand. In all likelihood, the bulk of this figure is actually debts that are over 90 days, and the likelihood of collecting those debts are very slim. So it basically points to a picture that municipalities are the figure is not realistically collectible. But in terms of the actual, also part of that balance in that 143 billion, there's also debt owed to municipalities by organs of state, which amount to approximately 8 billion rand. Now we're saying, because we're in an intergovernmental system, we've got different spheres of government, that debt owed by other spheres of government or other organs of state to municipalities, that should not be taken as not recoverable. That should be settled, that should be paid to municipalities, and in fact we should have a system going forward where other organs of state should ensure that they do pay the municipal bills on a timely basis and not you know, in a way contribute to some of the challenges the local government also faces. So that's the one point. And the other point is that, you know, what we pick up is that when municipalities are owing Eskom and the water boards and they have inability to pay, the Treasury is very quick to come and, you know, institute the issue of withholding the equitable share and having punitive measures. And the one point I just wanted to raise is that we want to also request that it has what's good for the goose should be good for the gander as well. And that the Treasury should also apply similar principles to the other spheres of government as well. When they fail to you know, honor their debts to local government, there should be some preventive measures taken as well. Then the last slide before the conclusion, what does this talk to us, or what did the medium-term budget policy statement reflect in terms of audit outcomes, oversight and accountability? The Auditor General's report that was released in 2016-17 reflected quite a negative picture. There was a number of regressions. There was quite a significant increase in irregular expenditure. It went up by 75% to 28.4 billion rand. And the message that the Auditor General has been raising has been the issue that there's a lack of consequences and accountability in municipalities. So that's something that I think we need to definitely look at, and we come into in terms of our suggestions, or in terms of our recommendations. SALGA is currently embarking, or we're currently in the process of developing a consequence and accountability framework for municipalities. And the whole idea about this is that we need to ensure that municipalities start taking action appropriately. There are other interventions. There's a financial misconduct regulations that Treasury has issued a while back that also talks of consequences and accountability. But we need to be more holistic in terms of how we look at the issue of consequences and accountability as well. We're also very well aware that the Public Audit Amendment Bill that the Auditor General is now waiting for the President to sign into law is going to give them more powers as well. So if an accounting officer does not address issues appropriately, the Auditor General will have the power to refer those matters to an investigating body, which will also in a way force accountability and consequence management. But what we are trying to say from a SALGA perspective is we want to lobby and encourage our municipalities to take appropriate action and have consequences where consequences are required. The other point I wanted to raise is that the funds lost by municipalities in the collapse of the VBS Mutual Bank also had an impact. It was also highlighted. It's also impacted some municipalities quite significantly, because in some cases they had invested equitable share, in some cases they had invested the conditional grants as well, and obviously it will have an impact in terms of the service delivery and their ability to continue operating effectively as well in that financial year. And then the other point was that in the medium-term budget policy statement, it was stated that Treasury will work with the AG's office and OCTA to reduce wasteful, irregular, and unauthorized expenditure and deal with financial misconduct in municipalities. From a SALGA perspective, we also want to categorically state that we are also supportive of such a thing. And again, our message when we engage with our municipalities is that irregular, unauthorized, irregular expenditure needs to be reduced significantly, and where possible, it needs to be eliminated totally as well. So, as I mentioned, the one view we wanted to express was the issue of the consequence management framework. And as I said, we're currently working on a framework as SALGA. The second point I wanted to raise is the issue of the oversight capacity. So we know in almost all municipalities, they've established the Municipal Public Accounts Committees, or MPACs. These MPACs, however, are in many cases under-capacitated, under-resourced, and they don't have the appropriate administrative support to assist them, and the appropriate research capability to be able to interrogate reports adequately, etc. And that's something we are working with. So SALGA, together with Treasury and COCTA, has developed an impact toolkit, which was funded by the German government. We're currently on a rollout program where we're actually rolling it out to municipalities, to the impacts, to assist them to understand their roles, to clarify certain things, and to make them more effective and efficient in terms of exercising their oversight capacity. The last point I wanted to raise is the issue, as I talked about a little earlier, the issue of the constant reforms. Now, the constant reforms, it poses a huge challenge. And currently, we're facing one reform, which is called the Municipal Standard Charter of Accounts reform, the MSCOBA reform, which from the 1st of July 2017, all municipalities were required to implement this reform. And for the financial year ended 30th of June 2018, they were supposed to have submitted financial statements based on the MSCOBA Chart of Accounts. Now, the challenge that we are facing, members, is that this reform was driven by National Treasury, but unfortunately, Treasury didn't do a proper readiness assessment or didn't do adequate training to municipalities prior to implementation. The cost of these reforms has also been very significant. So municipalities have spent huge amounts of money. We're currently on an exercise, doing a research exercise, looking at the cost of reforms. MSCOA will be one of them. But we know municipalities have spent hundreds of billions of rand, and in total it may even go into the billions with regards to the MSCOA reform. But the challenge that we're facing is many municipalities still now, to date, are not able to actually use these new systems that they have. And there's a number of other issues with regards to the MSCOA, but we will not go into all of those details right now. But SALGA will be preparing a document as well. You know, we've engaged with Treasury. One of the things we recommended when the MSCOA was being implemented was, while we understand the reform and why it needs to be there, the challenge that we had and one of the things we raised with Treasury was they should have phased it in rather than follow a big bang approach. Because we understood it's not just a finance reform, it was a whole business reform in terms of how the municipalities operate. And obviously, the change management needs to be done appropriately. And you've got different categories of municipalities. So a small municipality in an area where it's difficult to find skills and who's getting, for example, disclaimer audits for a number of years will find it very difficult to implement such a complex reform versus a municipality as a metro who's performing very, very well. And unfortunately, the feedback we've been getting from municipalities is even those bigger capacity municipalities are struggling towards the reform itself as we speak now. So that is a concern for us. So in conclusion, members, we feel that the actual statement that the minister made was somewhat underwhelming. We do know that the country is in an economic crisis, and the crisis can only be understood by looking at the root causes in a holistic way. So the solution to our economic problems lies in bold measures of transformation. We know that the issue that the rating agencies are also hovering about and looking at our ratings as well, and we see that there are three areas that they will be considering and they'll be focusing on. So the one is the issue of the pace of fiscal consolidation. The other one is the reforms to the state-owned enterprises, and the third one is the measures to lift the economic growth. What's positive on the whole thing is that the president is very well aware of these things, and obviously from his point of view, he is looking at all these three aspects, and he's trying to put measures in place to address all of it. So those are welcomed. So we do know that the fiscal balance is not narrowing as previously expected. It's actually getting broader and wider. But again, I think from a national treasury perspective, they are going to be looking at how, I mean, they do have a plan to limit the debt ceiling, and they want to limit the actual GDP to this ratio to 60%, and we're hoping that based on that, the rating agencies will look at this favorably. Regarding the reforms for the SOEs, there are some positive moves. I mean, some of the boards have been revamped. There's also, I think it's not now like just to say that if there's a bailout required, it'll just be given to these SOEs. There's now more accountability being exercised. And so I think over time, we should see that the issue is being transformed. And the final point, the issue of the economic growth is a bit of a thorny issue. The forecasts for growth are underpinned by the success of the economic recovery and stimulus plan. And obviously, the rating agencies will need to determine, in terms of their own assessment, whether these plans will be successful or not. So one of the things, or the final point I want to make, is that based on these three factors, the agencies will probably not be too enthusiastic or too positive about the MTBPS. I think by and large, the minister tried his best in a difficult, you know, environment to try to craft something which is positive, but also highlighting the challenges. But from at an overall perspective, we feel that, from a SALGA perspective, we just want to say that we do feel that as long as some of the fundamentals do change, and as long as we do find a change also in terms of the financial management in local government and government as a whole, then these things will contribute to a positive environment. The other point I wanted to also make, which is not on the slide specifically, but fundamental to the whole stimulus and economic growth issue is local government. Because local government is where the actual industries and companies and economy is. So if we can make sure that local government gets our services right, we provide what is required at the appropriate time efficiently and effectively, that will contribute positively to that. If local government does not get it right, then it's going to be difficult for the actual economic growth to actually move forward. Even if you have companies who want to expand, if there isn't a capacity in the municipality to provide electricity, sewage, water, etc. for the expansion, it cannot happen. So hence we're saying that it's important that local government is, and we're well aware, that we have a very fundamental role to play in terms of this. And yes, from a SASA perspective, our message out there to municipalities is we need to make sure that we have our house in order as well, so we can actually assist and contribute to that. And that's our presentation. Thank you.
Well, let me thank you for the interesting presentation. Honourable members, I'm going to invite you to reflect and then interrogate the presentation. But it's a very interesting presentation. Okay. All right. Honourable Member Martin.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to the presenters. A fundamental challenge for a number of municipalities has been an inadequate tax base. And that results in a number of municipalities not being financially stable, viable, and sustainable. So that's a fundamental problem. If the municipality can't achieve its tax targets, or the communities that derive services from the municipality are unable to pay, that remains a fundamental challenge. You have spoken and said that ultimately what the minister, finance minister said was underwhelming. And you spoke about a need for fundamental change in a number of areas. But you need to articulate more clearly what's meant by this fundamental change. You can't just say that there's a need for fundamental change. But what are we referring to specifically from your vantage point? Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Any other intervention? Honourable Member Sinkwanyani.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. And thank you so much, Valga, for the presentation. Let me start by just asking about, you mentioned the issue of ESCOM, the challenges and the management by ESCOM versus the municipalities. What would be your take in terms of which system you think would work better? I'm not sure if you said the municipality collects more or I just missed, but I know you said something about it. But also the issue of prepaid electricity. I know that ESCOM has adopted that, but they also have challenges because people steal the electricity. They bypass the meters and so on. So the issue of ESCOM, I think it's quite complicated because there are people who do other things rather than just pay or not pay. And then the issue of infrastructure. I think you've raised something very important about lack of maintenance, which is, I think, is a very big challenge. And continuing with erecting or building new infrastructure at the expense of the maintenance. But my question then would be perhaps, do you think that the municipality has the capacity to run this infrastructure? Because we do have serious problems even with the new infrastructure. We have incomplete projects and so on, and a lot of irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure like you. Further on, you have mentioned that there is this challenge, and some of them are related to this capacity issues. I'm just imagining that, but maybe you can actually just share with us how you find that. In terms of government departments owing the municipalities, it's always been a sore point for all of us, I think, because while we say the municipality this and that, but if government departments do not pay, then we have a serious problem. But I saw that you've also raised the fact that, you know, there's been a lot of discussion, and it's been going on, I think, for many, many, many years. I know you have written that the minister, or this minister of finance and so on, but I would like to just get a sense of what progress. I know you did say that a lot of them are not paid, but would you perhaps you don't have the percentages, but how would you rate the percentage debt across the country by the government department? And perhaps let me just ask one more. Not really ask, but just comment on the issue of the municipal public accounts committees, because you were saying that there's no support, there's this. I mean, the last time I knew, they were just not taken seriously, let alone not being supported. You would have situations where, the municipal public accounts committee chair and the speaker at loggerheads because they just didn't agree on oversight being carried out over them. So if you can just speak to that, I think I will end there. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member Sukunyani. Honorable Member Manana.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And let me welcome the presentation from Salga. The first question I would like to ask is, how many municipalities are financially stable and sustainable out of these 277? The second issue is with regards to the unfunded mandate. I know that there are libraries and clinics that are still under municipalities, but according to the constitution, some of the municipalities are not supposed to do that, and some of the libraries are unfunded mandate for the municipalities. For how long are we going to resolve this issue? The third issue is with regards to the own revenue collection from the municipalities. I'm staying in Witbank, Emalahleni. We are not getting accounts at all, and I don't know how are you expecting people to pay for their services if they don't get their accounts. They don't know what are they owing. I don't know whether we are aware of this. I went there to find out why the people are not getting their accounts. I was told that there's a website where you can go to and download the what of the municipalities. Fortunately, I do have the gadgets. I can do that. But how many people that were needed, they can go to the website? And we'll be crying, saying people, they don't want to pay. I asked the mayor, truly speaking, I don't know whether we're in England here, where everybody is using. There are still people who are uneducated here in South Africa. But at the same the Minister of Finance talked about the action committee that took the municipality to court and they won the case. And there are so many people who are now want to join this action committee because they are dissatisfied about the services. We can come here as SALGA representing the municipality and lament to us that people, they don't want to pay. At Msugaligwa, people are expected to pay as from the first of the month. But they are getting accounts after the 7th, and after the 15th, they are going to be charged to pay late payments. But they are not delivering their accounts in an appropriate time. And before we can complain about the communities, but let's make a thoroughly investigation about ourselves. What I'm talking about, that is what I'm experiencing every month. This month I went to the municipality to go and ask them how much I'm owing, exactly for how many months. And the officials were very happy to see me, say, yes, you're a member of parliament, let's tell you what is happening here. And officials, some of the things that were telling me, it's horrible. We're talking about this capacity building. And people have been trained many a times. And those who are already trained, they are removed. And they put people who don't know anything. Like the SAG of the SARS, where a manager was put there not knowing anything about SARS issues. Even in the municipality, it's just like that. And always will come here and say, capacity building, capacity building. Some of the things are being done deliberately so. Thank you.
Thank you. And is there any other intervention? Honourable Member, welcome. I'm so happy to see everything you know you are free to participate in as a member of Parliament. So I recognize you and then Honourable Member McLaughlin and Honourable Member in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, may I thank SALGA for the input which they gave to us. Yes, Chairperson, there are numerous challenges which we are faced with in our municipalities. I just want to find out from the challenges which we are faced with, which were also given to us as input. Firstly, I think there was the issue of the VBS as well as the investments of grants. Is that actually how things should be done? Because it sounds quite onerous on us that, you know, grants are also invested. It should not actually be in that order. Secondly, I think one of the members asked a question which I would also need an input on, and that is the amount which is owed by government departments. I think I would like to spin it and actually state that we would also need to find out the amounts which are owed by government departments as compared to other entities, like, let's say, for instance, the private sector. And exactly what is being done to these government departments, because many of them, they are the ones that are retarding progress in local authorities. Most of the municipalities are bankrupt. because of non-payment, which has been made by government departments. What actually is being done? The issue of the public accounts committees in municipalities, an entity which has got to be given a lot of teeth so that they could actually act and work. What actually is being done? Because they need to be given a lot of powers so that they can implement their work. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable Member McLaughlin.
Thank you, Chair. If I just pick up on where my colleague just left off there, with the impacts, I know they're a toothless bunch. They can do nothing. The municipal managers won't even attend their meetings. They just ignore them. So I would agree with that. They need to have some teeth so they can actually do their jobs. But thanks to Selga for this. It's an interesting presentation. It's concise, and it gives us a good window into what's happening. You know, we were talking here about where the debt ceiling is now going to be set at 60% by 2023. And I was just looking back at some previous figures. In the 2012 budget, we were told that the debt would stabilize at 38% in the 2014 year. We're now looking at 60%. It's almost double that. And this is from 2012 to now in 6 years. So if we project that 6 years ahead, we're going to be in serious trouble unless we can turn this around. So far, all our counter-cyclical attempts have had no real effect other than just get us further into the hole. Professor Plakis told us yesterday... Professor Plakis told us yesterday that 87 municipalities are in a debt trap. In other words, they've now borrowed beyond their ability to ever pay it back. What about the poor citizens who live there? What about the residents? They've had no hand in this. They, ordinary everyday South Africans, pay their rates and taxes, and they get less and less for their money all the time. It becomes a huge frustration, and the effect of it is that they no longer want to pay. You've now got unwilling people out there who are not prepared to contribute to their municipalities anymore because they're getting nothing for their money. Have you got any kind of suggestion as to how we address this? You know, we as a committee attended a conference a short while ago that was encouraging municipalities to look into different ways of raising money. And now, on the one hand, we're saying to municipalities, you must go out there and borrow as much as you can. And when they do that, they get into a debt trap, and now they're stuck. Where do we draw the line? There's got to be a balance found somewhere. And it seems to me that one of the difficulties is municipalities are either unwilling or unable to get in the money that's due to them from their own residents. I know where my constituency is, it's a huge problem. Because in that constituency, there's a large portion of that constituency or that municipality that owes the municipality nearly 3 billion rand in unpaid rates and taxes. There's no attempt whatsoever made to recover that money. It's also not written off. So it's just carried from year to year. It does no good to anybody. And as a result of that, there's just no service delivery. They cannot afford anything. They've got a municipality with 1 million people in it, and they've got 1 refuse truck. How are you ever going to service people? And it's in breach of our law. You know, the municipal manager, the mayor, they're all now guilty of criminal offences because they're unable to comply with the requirements of the law in terms of environment protection and all that kind of thing. And surely the municipal managers, the mayors themselves, must be looking at this and trying to find a way out of this because it's just a spiral. And there must be at some stage a turnaround. Surely we need to turn things around. Ever since I've been in this committee, I've been an advocate of increasing what gets paid to municipalities. It's been at 9% ever since I've sat in this committee, and I think 9% is too little. I know I'm a bit of a voice out in the wilderness because everybody says, yeah, but municipalities have got their ability to recover money themselves, and that's what they should do. But if the municipality itself is not capacitated and doesn't have the power to do that, you can't then punish the citizens for the fact that the municipality can't do their job. And that's in effect what happens. So I'd like to hear you. Are you in favor of an increase in the percentage that municipalities get? Because you don't lobby us for that, and I think you should be doing that. You know, you just say it as a fact, 9% to provinces, but you don't say you'd like to see it at 12% or 15% or whatever you might think about it. It's not going to happen in a hurry, but unless you push for it, it won't ever happen, as far as I'm concerned. Then I'd like to know just, is there any kind of standardization across the municipal world where you have a sort of municipal employee to resident ratio of how many employees you have per resident, how many refuse trucks per 100,000 residents, how many of this, how many of that. Is there a standardized format that you try and use? Because in some municipalities, obviously, there's huge wastage of money and they have far more expenditure on things that they don't need and no expenditure on the things they do need. You have a municipality that has one operating vehicle and 40 vehicles sitting in the garage waiting to be repaired. It's just senseless. It makes no sense at all. I'll have half that number of vehicles, but all on the road, rather than all sitting in a garage somewhere. The sort of failure to maintain is a huge issue. I know the Treasury has said in the past that 8% of your budget must go towards maintenance, and then it was changed to 8% of the value of the municipal assets should be allocated for maintenance. But you don't have the money to do it. What's the answer? How can we find a middle path there? I'll stop there. Thanks, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable Member for holding.
Thank you, Chairperson. May I also appreciate the input by SALGA, as my colleagues have done. My first question relates to the report of the AG, the most recent one, which noted that in terms of financial performance and accounting, municipalities have generally regressed from what they had achieved in the previous financial years. My question is: how is SALGA going to address this issue and assist municipalities to better perform and better account and minimize irregular, wasteful, and fruitless expenditure in the municipalities? Linked to that, you have mentioned that about 133 municipalities have adopted unfunded mandates. What could be the issues that persuade these municipalities to adopt such unfunded mandates, knowing that they don't have the funds? And how could they be assisted? May I also ask, with regard to infrastructure, of the allocations on your slide, it would be 2.4. It would be slide 5. Is SALGA suggesting or proposing any concrete percentage that municipalities must allocate towards maintenance of existing infrastructure? I raise this question because it's been a problem for some time that we don't maintain the infrastructure that we have. And I think you made a note of that yourself in your input. I want to relate this to link this to my next question as to what extent is SALGA cooperating or working with the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer to ensure value for money when it comes to either building new infrastructure or maintenance of new of existing infrastructure, so that you ensure quality and value for money. I raise these issues because I've always wondered why is it that if you travel if you are in the black townships generally and semi urban areas which have tarred roads, you normally have a very poor maintenance of infrastructure, and I specify black areas. Because if you go into the what was formerly white urban areas, the infrastructure there is generally well maintained. If there is a leak, water leak, it's immediately fixed. If there is a pothole, it's immediately fixed. One time I asked people who were standing along the road, I saw a very huge pothole which could drown a child if there is water in it, because water was leaking from a house into the road. And I asked this question, why is it that particularly in black areas we are failing to maintain infrastructure? Two issues came up in the course of that informal talk. One is that the water leaks are not attended to by the municipalities. The water flows into the road, cars drive onto that, and eventually potholes get created. Someone remarked about that big pothole that I was referring to as we were standing there. He says, "No, the water pipe is damaged from inside the yard of a particular household and its fence. So clearly the responsibility of repairing that water pipe lies with the owner of the house because it's inside the yard. But instead of that pipe, if that household repairing the pipe, they simply dig a trench and direct the water onto the road. So somebody raised an issue of educating our people here, that it's important to know that the water pipe put into the house by the municipality, so long as it is inside your yard, it's your responsibility to repair. You can't blame the municipality for that. You can't also dig a trench and direct that water onto the road and then cause the damage. So a lot of talk to our communities, particularly needs to be done through the cardinals. And I don't know to what extent SALGA is really attending to that issue. So I'm linking that whole infrastructure maintenance to that story. But lastly, on the collection, revenue collection, I went into some rural area somewhere in just outside Pietermaritzburg. And I saw a cluster of water meters on the dead road, just outside the dead road. These are new water meters, and already the water is leaking onto the dead road. And that cluster of water meters, five or six of them, I'm not sure that your workers, for instance, who go and read those meters would tell which meter belongs to which house, because it's a cluster of them. So in that situation, because it probably, I saw just one, such cluster of meters may be existing elsewhere, you would find it difficult to collect the revenue for the water that is consumed in that kind of area. It's rural, it's a cluster, it's not clear which meter is linked to which house. And the water is leaking into, from these water meters themselves, not from the pipes inside the yard, from the water meters themselves, the water is leaking out. So it raises very serious questions about the quality of work those who you contract to put your infrastructure onto the ground do. Linked to that, when there's a pothole you give contract to this small emerging enterprises, and the story we hear as we converse with communities is there is no monitoring of the work these small contractors do. As a result, they do shoddy piece of work deliberately, because 3 or 4 months down the line, there must be the pothole must be there again so that they get a new contract. So it raises a question about how you monitor those small contractors and how you monitor the quality of work they do. Now, let me move on from that maintenance, Chairperson. I want to raise an issue we've raised repeatedly in this committee, and probably the other relevant committee does as well. You are raising very specific issues around challenges related to the cost of service delivery in one of your slides. And you mention among those population density. I want to raise this issue again of illegal connections. some of the illegal connections is not necessarily your responsibility. It's the responsibility of the electricity ESCOM, perhaps. Because we've raised this issue with them. Illegal connections of electricity, illegal connections of water, not only to the informal settlements, but also to informal businesses. And our beloved foreign nationals are very notorious for this. Whether you're talking African foreign nationals or Chinese foreign nationals, they do the same thing. And we have not heard how SALGA and municipalities are vigorously following up on this issue of illegal connections, so that part of improving your revenue collection includes that as well. And unless you address this as well as part of the package of your revenue collection, you know, this thing is like the illicit flows, Chairperson, we talked about so repeatedly in the relevant departments, and it gets neglected. It's the same kind of story. So please attend to that. If you want to improve your revenue collection, explain to us your... That's my next one, Chairperson. The administrative cost burden. I'm not sure whether you are suggesting that your administrative structure is too cumbersome and therefore costly, or it's the lack of skills in some instances, and therefore that necessitates the use of consultants. All of that put together, if you could explain to that, and how as SALGA you are proposing to address this this question. I think let me stop there, Chairperson. Thank you.
Okay, just one from me. Thank you once more for the information enriching and also helping us to gain deeper insights in these matters, local government allocation and the challenges confronting local government with regards to the expenditure of the budget and lack of capacity and continuously receiving the audit outcomes that talks to every year, every time, that talks to your irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. That is balloon. This time, you are actually saying it's ballooning more than 70% for 2016-17 financial year. And irregular expenditure. Please. Undermine that irregular expenditure specifically increased 75% to 28.4 billion in 2016-17, up to 16 billion in 2015-16. I'm just talking to the challenge. Now my question is on your, I think it's a very slight one, but in future if you can number them for easy reference, it will assist. You're saying service delivery receives an inadequate distribution of nationally raised revenue. And you also go on to say there was a joint meeting between yourselves and FFC to look at what you would consider adequate allocation from your nationally raised revenue. All right. I would like you to share with us on your findings and your recommendations on this one. All right? But have you shared this, even yesterday I raised this question, have you shared this information with National Treasury? And what is the outcome of your meeting with National Treasury on this proposed increase of the service delivery equity distribution, you know, from the nationally raised revenue? So what is, but do you realize that with the 9% that is allocated there, I know that the expectation is that municipalities must then come up with their own revenue collection. And you have correctly said some cannot, you know, they're unable, they cannot afford because of maybe the poverty in that municipality, which is not assisting them to collect enough so that they can provide the quality service that is expected from them. Now, here you have to come up with a, to me it will be a balancing act. What balancing act are you thinking of in terms of, you want them to increase, but already, I said to you, when I said underline the irregular expenditure, what is the balancing act that you want to come up with? Because you can't keep putting money in a hole, né? And that money does not benefit those who are supposed to be the beneficiaries from that money. For now, we also heard that, I just am not quite sure, I'm sure Professor Blackie can help us with that one, about the so many, is it 80, municipalities that are debt trapped. And that immediately says they are dysfunctional. So what intervention strategy are you proposing? Because to me, your other role, but you'll correct me if I'm misunderstanding your role, is to monitor, you know, the, I think, like ourselves, to oversight over municipalities. And also with this serious intervention of capacity building so that they can achieve, in terms of their mandate, that of service delivery to the people, and also your infrastructure development. So can you tell us about your oversight there, and how can you make it effective? Because from the message that we read from the wall, it's not effective. That's why we'll continuously get these outcomes, you know, negative outcomes, audit outcomes from the Auditor General. There's no movement. Regardless of the fact that there's no movement, you still want more money. To me, it says we're going to increase the wasteful expenditure. You need to prepare the ground so that, and Honorable Member McLaughlin said, you must lobby us. What increase do you have in mind? They can lobby us, but if they have not prepared the ground, Honorable Member, I know it's your point, but my angle is if the ground is not well prepared, I mean, it'll be putting this money into a hole and it will disappear there without people still benefiting in terms of quality services. Your capacity building, because you have the money allocated for capacity building of municipalities. Indeed, if you're doing it, why are we still experiencing this? Why? Because it is categorically proved that these municipalities need to be capacitated so that they can be in a better position to provide quality service delivery, and also in a better position to manage their finances better, and also in a better position to improve their governance issues within their municipalities. Okay, I see you've come up with a very good initiative, your consequence management framework. I must commend you on this innovation. But then, when you came up with this, the process that unfolded for you to come to this, did you consult all your stakeholders so that there's a buy-in and support? All your stakeholders. I think that would be my take for now. Thank you very much. We will then hand over to you to respond to these issues. All we're saying, let's move. There must be a movement from talking to actual change on the ground. We've been talking and talking, and we talk about the same things, but there's no impact. Now, our role here is to follow the money. As we follow the money, we also want to see impact. But for now, we do not see impact. We find ourselves regressing. That's what the Auditor General is saying. Instead of an improvement and an impact, he says we are regressing. So that then becomes our concern. And how do we support you when you say we want more money, when you cannot use the very limited, the 9% that you are getting now, cannot be best used to the best interest of the beneficiaries, in the best interest of the beneficiaries. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I will start and then Maud finish with certain other technical questions. I think the first question was a very big question. The inadequate base, tax base. If you run a business, you depend on investment that you acquire or you get from your shareholders. And the shareholders in this case become the tax base, which that question, I think it was sitting there. I'll come back later on that question because I'll make some other issues raising, connecting to that question because the key fundamental question to us as Salga. I think, Honorable Manana, it's true. Maybe the minister also shared with you that community that took municipality to court. Court have made certain findings about the inability of government as a sector to support each other. Okay. I think the minister has shared that. One, in terms of the Municipal Systems Act, community is a shareholder in the business, and that is why we are required by law to do public participation in whatever that you do, budget, IDP, and so on. And therefore, shareholder, when they are unhappy, they take and use other instruments, like the instrument that they've used, and go to court. And it is really a very good lesson that we draw in as a local government practitioners, that how do we then interact and engage with our shareholders. And remember, in our environment, they are shareholders at one point. They are also recipient of service delivery. So they wear two caps interchangeably. We have done a lot of work, and you'll recall I've had many comments about MPEC. And you know MPEC, it was a gentleman's arrangement. And that is why SALGA, together with COGTA, we are amending the Municipal Structures Act so that you give this, I've had members are talking about this of the MPEC, to give this to MPEC to play what is expected insofar as oversight role. And that is why on the 6th we are having an interaction with the portfolio committee deals with COGTA. So the issue of MPEC going into the future, it might be not the same condition that we are experiencing today with the amendments that we are putting together insofar as that issues is concerned. We are also raising to COGTA and many other platforms the inability of various levels of government to use Section 154 of the Constitution that supports the local government. And this, it comes at the point when we are discussing the issues, the instrument in the Constitution called Section 139 intervention. And the requirement in terms of that instrument to make your own assessment as another level of government in terms of assessment and report in terms of what the witnesses that you find. So I think the bigger issue and the challenge here is the inability of the three spheres of government to share notes in identifying the witnesses in local state and be able to interact swiftly in the local state insofar as challenges that the local state is facing. I think that's one weakness that we have picked up as SALGA and we have raised with the relevant ministries and the president. On the issue of ESCOM, I don't know how much members know this. Those that stays in Gauteng, they know Gauteng, there is an Alexander and Santin. And I think there is no knowledge that Alexander subsidized Santin. Alexander subsidized Santin. Okay. How does Alexander subsidize Santin? Is that in Santin, the electricity allocation is located to ESCOM. In Alex, electricity from a municipality. When a municipality charge individuals, including the street lighting, and the street lighting in the town is not paid by those individuals, but paid, which is the township cross subsidize the town. Going back, what is it that we are dealing with? And I think the question is, how far from the last 20 years of democracy and freedom have we significantly transformed the country? I think that is the kernel of the issue. And I hope...
Okay, can you just repeat the issue of Santin and Alexander? I couldn't hear.
I'm saying, Alex, historically, it's a historical black township, if you want to call it. Santin, historically rich individual stays into that. The electricity which municipality is buying, I know we are having a MITT, Interministerial Task Team, who have dealt with that, but with some of the matters on ESCOM. The electricity used in township, because remember, when you buy electricity or water, you do what you call a mock-up of the cost. And through the mock-up cost that you do in township, you happen the township to subsidize the historically wealth area. Because in the wealth area, the electricity is provided by another entity, which that entity is not charging what you are charging in the township community. In that process, like for instance, in the township we charge 12 rand, I'm making an example. In town in Soundin, they charge 7 rand. The 12 rand, it covers the water. You see in town, there's water running in the park almost every day. Okay, so that is the issue that I'm saying. I'm saying there is a disjuncture, and there is the debate and the argument that we have with ESCOM, because it affects the revenue base of a municipality. Okay, and that is why IMTT and ourselves, we have resolved on that matter, and we have put a team to the high-tech individuals to investigate on that. So I'm saying it goes back to the issue that Honorable Ben was talking about, okay, the base issue. So that is the issue that I'm raising when it comes to that issue, in terms of our broader agenda, in terms of servicing, and that. And please remember that is what we're arguing as SALGA. That, remember, in terms of the constitutional ruling, water cannot be used as a pusher for individuals to pay services, but electricity can, because the water is a human right issue, as it was resolved by the Constitutional Court on the case in KwaZulu-Natal. So,
it's not a new issue.
and it's, I know you made an example of Alexandra and Sandra. It's all over the country that black townships have been, over the years, subsidizing what was formerly white and affluent urban areas. I had this story way back in 1985-86 from a person who was working in the Durban municipality in the electricity department, saying this, and I could hardly understand what he was saying to me, that black townships are subsidizing white rich areas insofar as electricity is concerned, and that goes for businesses as well, white-owned businesses that are located in the urban space. So when you see huge electricity charges in black townships, part of that is simply because they are subsidizing the formerly white affluent areas and businesses. And that issue has not been resolved to this day.
It has been resolved, Chair, because remember the SANGA in our NEC, as a NEC member, we took a decision to challenge the matter to Constitutional Court, and President Ramaphosa requested us not to. And he requested to put interministerial task team, which the interministerial task team, which is chaired by the Minister Zweli Mkhize, together with ourselves participating as an association, we agreed to put together an advisory team, which is drawn from different walks of life with the expertise. As I'm seated here, they've concluded their report, they've submitted the report. It's only to follow certain procedural processes insofar as that. So I'm saying, yes, it has been attended to because it's an issue that we have been raising to Parliament, that you're talking about transformation. What type of transformation are we talking about? How far are we in the last 20 years? And so on and so forth. So I'm saying, Chair, yes, on that matter, as it's raised by Honourable Member, it has received an attention, as we raised as SANGA, because our responsibility is to lobby, represent and advocate the interest of the local state, which in this process it happened to be in the situation where it is.
The problem we have, we are happy that the matter is receiving attention now. But why has it taken you so long? Why? Because in terms of the Constitution, you have to be responsive, and your responsiveness must be timeous. That's the Constitution. Why has it taken you so long? Why have you let our people to suffer so long when you have been there? That's why I spoke about your oversight function and its effectiveness.
That question, Chair, it can be asked to Parliament, because SALGA has been raising this matter for the last 15 years, that this issue is wrong because it doesn't speak to the constituency that we are serving as local government association. So that question, it has been there for the last couple of years that one can remember in the association. And that is why we took the matter as a decision in the NEC of SALGA to go to court to ask a declaratory order on these matters and many other matters that includes, which I'll come back to Honourable Manan in Emalahleni, which okay, the issue, Chair, that we are trying to bring home, it's locating that question with the first question raised by Honourable Martins. Because the erosion of deck space don't even think about a sustainable local government system. Because a deck space, it's what it must support the system in terms of its functionality. And I'm using the term deck space using some or stealing some words in the business operations. For a business to operate, it must have injected certain resources to it
for itself to succeed. So that is our view as SALGA, and that is why on this one we are happy, even though it cost us 15 years to deal with, because government, unfortunately, on these issues is an issue. Which this issue, Chair, it mustn't be said it's wrong. Like, for instance, our argument as SALGA on MSCOA. You think that MSCOA, it can be used in a municipality deep in Northwest, where the attraction of skill is nowhere to be found. And that is why SALGA, in our view, when we engage Treasury, we said, introduce it on phase approach. Like, for instance, I can share with this committee, maybe because I'm here, and that is why your big metro, like your Tshwane, they're saying this thing of MSCOA doesn't work because it requires us to go and get consultants. And the creators of MSCOA have left Treasury. And that is why in SALGA we are anticipating that in the coming period there will be another regime that is coming. Because they have left, they went to an entity that used to train municipalities on MSCOA usage. So I'm saying, Chair, we have not been quiet on these issues. We have been raising right into the face of authorities that must take decisions. That the trend that we are following, it's not right, is not in the benefit of our community as a municipalities where we operate, and so on. I think let me before I go too much to the issue. Linked to that, Chair, is what we have been raising. Capacity building. And the most unfortunate thing that we are seeing, when people refer to capacity building, they talk about the regulation compliance. And unfortunately, this is the challenge that we are facing as a municipality, that you don't comply with the regulation and therefore you are not capacitated. And that is why we engaged on this matter insofar as it to be looked at. I think the last issue, maybe you'll deal with there with many other issues moment. Okay. On the VBS, it is a known view from SALGA that we don't encourage our member municipalities to participate on instruments that are not beneficial. It is on record. It has been our view. And it has been our view that we have expressed in Parliament, like we are expressing today in this House, that there are weaknesses in the instruments that we are using in terms of oversight. And if you read the Municipal Finance Management Act, Section 71 of it, it's expecting that municipalities must report to Treasury and COGTA, not SALGA. Not SALGA, not reporting to, but reporting to Treasury and COGTA. Now, it has been, that is why we, as SALGA, we have developed instrument that actively participate and engage our member municipalities on challenges that they face. But by law, they are required to report to COGTA and Treasury.
Thank you. Yeah. I think maybe just the last point, and I think it's a very important point to mention. I think one of the challenges that SALGA faces, and maybe in response to the question that the Chair asked, the last one, in terms of clarifying SALGA's monitoring and oversight role, SALGA does not have the power currently to change legislation or amend legislation or regulation. So, for example, the MFMA, Systems Act, etc., those are within the ambit of Treasury and COGTA, as the Chair mentioned, from our side as well. So we cannot. So one of the challenges we face is, right, maybe this is something to also maybe let the committee know. One of the biggest challenges we face when it comes to issues of monitoring municipalities, and a good example is Section 71 reporting. So municipality needs to report in terms of Section 71 of the MFMA on a monthly basis, and they submit that report to Treasury and to COCTAS. SALGA does not get that report. The only time SALGA actually sees those reports is once Treasury has done a consolidation on a quarterly basis, and they've put it out to the public. That's the first time SALGA actually has sight of the actual Section 71 report and what it means for the municipality in that quarter. What we've been doing over the last couple of months is we've been lobbying Treasury and COCTA to say that, and actually our members as well, to say that when you are sending the Section 71 report, add one more recipient on your email, being the SALGA representative, so we can also get it at the same time as the other two bodies get it, so we can also start doing proactive monitoring and oversight, etc., in terms of it. Obviously, the purposes of it from a Treasury perspective are different, and from a SALGA perspective will be slightly different as well, because ours is not going to be punitive in nature. It's going to be more to see where are the gaps and how can we support you in terms of dealing with those things. So that's the one point. The other thing, maybe just to mention from our side, and I think it's also what Che mentioned here, one of the other matters to mention about, it's come out here, the issue of the unfunded budget and also unfunded mandate. The unfunded mandate issue is an issue that's been being raised on a regular basis year in and year out. So just to mention, before this medium-term budget policy statement was presented by the Minister of Finance, there's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes in terms of a budget forum that takes place. So there's a technical budget forum where all the technocrats sit together, ourselves, the FFC, Treasury, COCTA, etc., where we thresh out some of the technical issues. And then from there, once we've got consensus on matters, we then have a budget forum where the actual political principals discuss the matters. So we have a fairly good idea before the Minister of Finance presents his medium-term budget policy statement what's going to be in the speech, because we've already been taken through. We know what the issues are, we've inputted into the issues, etc. Now, the fundamental point to raise about this matter of the unfunded mandate specifically is that there's been work in the pipeline for a number of years now, which is regarding the powers and functions specifically. And that has been tasked to COCTA to deal with. And unfortunately, COCTA has been dragging their heels in terms of this, and we've raised it very, very, I won't say aggressively, but we raised it very vociferously at the last budget forum meeting to say that until and unless that document is done and we have clarity in terms of the powers and functions, this matter of unfunded mandates is going to be a matter that will continue for a while. Because unfortunately, the function, the funding doesn't always follow the function, if I want to call it that way. So they sometimes allocate the functions to local government, but the requisite funding doesn't come through. Hence, you get some of these situations where libraries, clinics, etc. are being administered by local government, but it hasn't been budgeted for, or you haven't got the funding for it in terms of that. The other point I wanted to just touch on is the issue regarding the ESCOM challenges in terms of the and how the prepaid electricity can also work, and also whether the municipality can maintain the infrastructure, just broadly, and I think it's been touched on over here already by our chair, to say that the issue, the subsidization issue is the one. The other big issue is that electricity supply agreements between municipalities and ESCOM hasn't been finalized in many instances. With the result that the other big example we know in Gauteng is that one of the biggest townships, Soweto, is supplied directly by ESCOM. But we know that the payment rate is quite poor in terms of what ESCOM is collecting. So, you know, whenever they say that they want to take over electricity supply in some areas, we ask them, but how are you then going to be able to improve the collection rate versus what the municipality is doing? And they don't really have a response for us. So the one point is that just this issue regarding the electricity supply is something from a constitutional point of view where it's been made very clear that electricity supply is the responsibility of municipalities, not of ESCOM. And it's a matter that's been discussed. The IMPT is looking at it. There has been some legal judgments or legal opinions that has been sought as well. I think the point is now that for us to then take it to act upon those legal opinions in terms of those matters specifically. The other one I wanted to touch on, Che, is this issue regarding the revenue generation versus borrowing, the whole issue of the debt trap that was mentioned. So one of the things that we've picked up, and it's a thing that, and it's a matter that we're very well aware of, and I was actually looking quickly at our summary of the latest Section 71 reports. Of the 143 billion rand that is owed to municipalities, what we've picked up is the amount that are realistically collectible in terms of debt is only 27 billion rand. So the remaining 120 billion rand or so is actually amounts which are highly unlikely you're ever going to collect. But the challenge is, how do municipalities write it off? And you'll understand, if you're a municipal councillor or you're a council sitting in a municipality, you'll be reluctant to write off a large chunk of money that is owed to your municipality. Because on the one hand, it sends the wrong message to say that if you don't pay, don't worry, we will write it off. And you know, it may create a wrong message and send a wrong message. So what SALGA has been doing, and what we're currently doing as we speak now, one of the key pieces of research we're undertaking now is the issue of looking at developing a historic debt bill, which will look at how do we repeal historical debt. But we're also then looking at what are the merits of it, what will be the effect of it, but also if we do it, it has to be done in a way that it will be like a quid pro quo. So we will propose that your debt can be written off with the proviso that you allow the municipality to install a prepaid meter or something similar, so that in the future you'll be able to then hopefully service those bills. We understand it's not a perfect system. People sometimes also bypass those prepaid meters, but at least it will be a way to say that going forward there will be a way that if you don't pay, you don't get. And if you pay, you will be able to get your services as well. The one point that was raised, I think, is very important, and I don't think we've done adequate work in terms of this, the issue of looking at norms and ratios. So in terms of looking at norms and standards, in terms of the ratio of service, you know, in terms of staff to residents, in terms of different service capabilities to residents, looking at the number of, whether it's whatever it may be, the equipment, whatever it is, we haven't done adequate work, and it's something that I think from our side we've noted it, and it's something that it's actually going to be very useful for us to look at, just for a number of things. So from the one point is just in terms of performance parameters, there was an exercise that was done earlier this year by COCTA in terms of identifying what will an ideal municipality look like. And unfortunately, it focused quite a bit on the finance aspects and not so much on the service delivery aspects. And perhaps bringing in some of these parameters in terms of that will actually give a more holistic view to say that over and above just looking at the numbers, we should also consider the parameters and norms in terms of service ratios as well, which may also be very, very useful. So within SALGA, we've also got a municipal barometer unit, which also starts looking at these issues of norms, standards, etc. It's something we will take up with them to focus on in the future. And then, what's the other one? Maybe the last point I want to raise, which is, it's a contentious issue, but it's an issue which is, it comes through year in and year out. So every year when the Auditor General raises issues his audit report, he always raises the issue of the amount of irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. I just want to mention, even though it's gone up by 75%, the figure is high, and ultimately it is a negative indication, if you want to call it that. However, it doesn't mean that 28 billion rand of money was wasted and went down a black hole. And this is one point we've been raising with the AG year in and year out as well. Just to explain to you, 95% of irregular expenditure relates to non-compliance with supply chain management policies or supply chain management regulations. Now, what that means is, if the supply chain management regulation says a tender must be advertised for 30 days, and for whatever reason you could not advertise for 30 days, you advertised only for 28 days, it's automatically taken as a non-compliance. You may have ended up getting the right supplier at the right quality and at the right price, but the mere fact that you weren't able to comply with that specific regulation of the SCM regulation is taken as irregular expenditure. So one of the things we've been asking the AG to do, because context always is important whenever it comes to these matters, and unfortunately the public perception is when you say irregular expenditure, people think money was stolen, money was chowed, nothing was received, etc., etc. So our viewpoint and our communication, and when we lobby and encourage our municipality, is obviously prevention is better than cure. So as far as possible, there shouldn't be instances of illegal expenditure. However, like in life, things happen. So unfortunately, in municipality environment, the laws are quite strict, and the SCM regulations are quite strict, with good reason. But there are going to be instances where you're not going to be able to follow all of it to the T. So we've been requesting the AG going forward, indicate what are the categories of irregular expenditure that you have picked up. And what we're trying to see in terms of that was, tell us specific instances where goods were received, where value for money was not received. Give us that value. Give us other instances where goods were received, where value for money was received, but there was not 100% compliance with the regulations. Because then it will give better perspective to the public, it will give better perspective to oversight, it will give better perspective to Parliament and to everybody else as well. And that for us is something that we're pushing very, very hard, because I think it's important. People mustn't think 28 billion rand was gone down the tubes and it's gone. It doesn't mean that. So that's one of the points I wanted to raise. And then the question you asked about how do we balance in the need for more and how much you want to ask for. So that study at the FSC showed, as I mentioned, there's two quantum. We call it the horizontal split and the vertical split of the equitable share. Now, the one part is looking at the overall quantum. And in terms of that, we have worked out, we have numbers as to what it should be. So we do have that. We can share the study, the results of the study with the committee as well. And just to mention, Chair, it's not like we've just sat with the report. So once we had the report, we've had engagements with Treasury, we've had engagements with COCTA. The standard response from Treasury is that the financial system is constrained. There's no additional money available. So we've got to do more with what we have currently in the fiscus. So we understand that, and we also understand that if you're going to give more to one sphere of government, you're going to take from another sphere of government. So there has to be some, there's got to be some balance and countermeasures that has to be taken into account. So we acknowledge that. However, the point we've been raising to Treasury as well is that by limiting or leaving the regime as it is currently now, it's not serving the purpose it was intended to do. So what is happening in many cases, and we also know that in many instances, municipalities, and there's a number of factors. So the one thing is, if your indigent register, for example, in a municipal environment isn't up-to-date, accurate, and complete, then a number of people that you're providing free basic services to, in reality, may be more than what's on the books. So obviously what you're getting versus what you're providing, there will never be a balance. So it means that you'll have a shortfall in terms of that, on the one hand. On the other side, the basket of services that you're getting the money for, because it's not costed appropriately, already there you're also having a shortfall as well. So there's a number of factors, and the study talks to all of those things as well. So just to mention on that matter specifically. And I think the rest of the comments, by and large, many of them were comments that we should have noted. I don't know anything else specifically that you want responses to from us.
Okay. I know our anger is the impact that you also make in there, you know? Something has to come and give us a response and the impact of the money that you can get, you know? Because indeed, you have the best interest of the best performance of municipality. So, all right, honourable members, are there any follow-up questions or new questions? Honourable Member Mnana, who else would want to speak? Honourable Member Sukwanyane? Okay, for now, I think the follow-up questions or new questions will come from the two members of the end. Honourable Member Banana?
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Well, I ask about the issue of the accounts in Malahlelo. Are they aware of the community is not receiving their account? I even have a proof here of a notice from them that is talking about how to go to their website. And I'm saying, I know people who are from the location. Not even majority of the our majority people, they don't have these gadgets. So if you are saying they need to download these, how can they know?
I have a proof, here it is. The second issue is with regards, you never came, you never attended to that tutorial. You know or you are not aware of the new system that the municipality are going to use, I don't know. But if they are going to use, it's a very wrong one. You have indicated that the issue of the VBS was reported to the Treasury and COPTA. In other words, they are telling us that they were fully aware of this. Well, there is an argument in your slide 5 where we are saying the money that we are getting is inadequate. The money that is distributed from the national revenue is not adequate. But the Treasury used to counter-argue this matter by saying the municipalities are receiving funding in a form of grants and they generate additional value, revenue by charging for its services. What is your view as SALGA? Here in Cape Town, wherever you go to the town, you need to pay for your parking. But in most of the municipalities, they are not doing that. I think by doing that, you can collect some revenue from that. But maybe if I can find a reason, majority of the participants are not doing it. What is it? What is the reason? The last question I wanted to ask is with regards to the infrastructure fund that is proposing. As we all know that our municipalities, they are not really geared for this, according to the Auditor General's report, which they are not using their allocated budget accordingly. Do you think they are ready for this? They can take us subway?
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I really do want to start by speaking to the issue of irregular expenditure. I hear that explanation and I don't think it holds any water. Irregular expenditure is irregular and it means non-compliance with the legislation applicable. And for it to balloon like that is a serious concern. Unlike unauthorized expenditure, at least unauthorized expenditure is also not necessarily allowed, but at least you could still live with it. But once it's irregular, then it's irregular, and it cannot be condoned. So I think I just wanted to put that one to sleep, to say it cannot. We cannot even entertain it. We know exactly what irregular expenditure is. I think some of the things that I wanted to ask already, okay, I mean, I have already been asked by my colleagues, but I just wanted to check in terms of informal settlement upgrading, which is a good thing, which you have actually mentioned as to what is the extent of illegal in land invasions, because a lot of these informal settlements, sometimes you find that land is not necessarily meant for residential purposes, but it happens that people occupy there. So what is the extent of this problem? Because I know in the past it has been a huge challenge that we have. I think the other thing that I really wanted to, but just to comment also on this issue of consequence management, I think you need to be commended for actually thinking about this consequence management, because it's a challenge that we've been sitting with forever. But I think we really need, it's just good that you put some points in terms of the framework. But also bearing in mind that some of the offences are so serious that we need more drastic steps taken against, because some of them is a matter of this very irregular expenditure or some other forms of wrongdoing which need more serious penalties, not just in terms of bonuses and all that, but this is just by way of commenting that you may need to look beyond that and look at what can be done, because if you just don't give me my bonus, so what? I can continue doing what I'm doing. Thank you.
Just I think I'm responding to your earlier response where you said the training, the emphasis on the training on the business issue, so that compliance, the balance between performance and compliance. And what informs how that training focus? As in your oversight, that's my thinking, as you discover some of these gaps, to me you would then develop a program to address. Now, if your training program does not address good governance, leadership, and compliance, how is capacitation going to be done? Cannot only be announced in discussion. All right. Also, my understanding is that you see, that every newly introduced policy, the municipalities are going to be trained, because what they are doing, they're also implementing policy. Am I right? So then you also say in your response, these newly introduced reforms by National Treasury, they also slow down service delivery, because the management must grapple with adjusting, training and adjusting in terms of the new reforms, meaning they will then devote their attention to that instead of focusing on fast-tracking service delivery. So, I want you to just explain on. Is it not your role, after these are introduced, to develop the program and then you run with it, so that all the management can familiarize themselves with it and then implement without any problem? There's a maintenance on the existing infrastructure. You say there is no maintenance. You said focus on the new national treasury infrastructure targets. My understanding is that every municipality under infrastructure development will have two programs. The new National Treasury infrastructure target, but also maintenance. To an extent that you then expect that municipalities would have a maintenance plan because it falls under infrastructure. Now in your training you then have to open their eyes and say, infrastructure does not necessarily need it, so you must also have a plan. Now, if you say to us there is no maintenance on it, it means there are no plans. Training should then make them aware of the importance of having a maintenance plan, because maintenance is an infrastructure development. And to us, it's even cost effective to maintain instead of leaving these buildings. Why I'm emphasizing this one is because the National Development Plan uses infrastructure as one of the main pillars to create jobs and also to reduce poverty and also to close the gap, the inequality gap. So if we don't get it right now, and I'm sure you've heard from the MTP, because the emphasis is on fast-tracking of infrastructure development. So if you're not assisting the municipalities around this, it means that this will remain a long pipe dream. This is about fast-tracking infrastructure development, and the money that is allocated there will end up not being used, the grants will end up being surrendered, you know, because there are no plans. And indeed, the minister spoke about we have to improve on our planning, assessment, and I think it's implementation, monitor the implementation. So the Air Force has got, even in your training now, to me, you would have to adapt your training so that it also assists in sharpening the municipality's thinking along the lines of infrastructure development, because that's where it looks like we have to go to also assist in the inclusive economic growth. So if you could just respond on that one. And then I have raised this, I know, minute. There is this aging infrastructure. I hear new infrastructure projects. Aging infrastructure that talks to aging pipes, ne? Underground. Nobody's talking about that. It's like we're waiting for this sewage spillage all over before we can respond. And that is it's reactionary, you know, instead of planning ahead. Who is sensitizing municipalities on this one and actually move to a point where they are planned to undo the aging infrastructure so that we can fix it before it is broken?
Thank you, sir.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. I'm sorry for this, but I wanted to talk about these departments that are owing municipalities. I think now it is time that we need to get those municipalities, those departments, and as this committee, especially those who are owing the most, to call them with Zelda to come and clarify this issue to us. But what is the problem of not paying the municipality? The second issue, chapter 7, with regards to the aging infrastructure that you're talking about. I'm hearing you talking about the pipe. But now I don't know whether it's a syndicate or what. They are removing the steel in the drain. Due to this issue that we're having today, the climate change, we are going to have floods, one or another, but our drains will find them collapsing. And this is going to be a very disastrous issue. I'm just saying to SARS that you need to talk to the municipalities and raise this issue very seriously, because most of these drains, they are broken, and it's going to cause a very serious matter. Thank you very much, Professor, for allowing me.
Yeah, you're right. You know, maybe it's linked to what we refer to as SALCA, collective planning. Because remember, local government, it operates in South Africa in a particular space and land. And that is why you are adapted as a parliament, in wall-to-wall type of municipalities. And therefore, any plan that takes place in a municipality had to be involved. But also, national and provincial government had to be involved. Okay, because planning, this is the issue that we are having with National Treasure. Bring the MSCOA in a deep rural municipality who has no technical capabilities. What do you do? You need to factor it into your planning. Okay. Now, that is why as SALCA we encourage member municipalities about the importance of planning through your IDP processes. Because remember, in terms of the law that we are operating at, we are expected as municipalities to adopt IDP, which is your integrated development plan. Which in that integrated development plan, various important departments have to play a role, which they are not playing role. So the issue of planning is collective, because we are a unitary government. Okay. And then therefore, planning it become important in terms of different role players. Unfortunately, you can go to any municipality in the country, when they have their IDP, lead departments are not there. And that is why we are calling it SELGA as at some point a fiscal dumping. When department is not performing and expending money, the easiest way is to dump it to municipality. It was not factored into the pledge. So I think the issue of planning is an important matter which it affects different role players, both provincial, national, and local state, and which unfortunately is a weakness that we are having in the country, which we are not really performing very well on it. To us, capacity, it evolves. It will never end. It will never end because we have trained individuals today on MSCOA. There will be new challenges that municipality will face. And as the new challenges comes out, you need a different technique of training. And that is why in our agreement with Treasure is that when you train MSCOA principles, you cannot ask somebody private, because SELGA is a training institution. Okay. So because we know that training and development, capacity building, it evolves. It changes with terms and requires different techniques in terms of training. We are told, Honorable Manana, we could not answer on your specific question about Amalahleni. Okay. Because the law says municipality is a government that plans and that institute according to the views that they have. And they must then engage and we become aware of such issues and assist them on their plans. Okay. So the issue that you raise about statements of payment or whatever, to go to website and so on, and that is why Mohammed said some of these issues we are taking them, we are going to make a follow-up to those municipalities because we don't have details and we don't want to mislead the House by claiming things that we don't know of them. We are going to make, it's one of those issues that we are going to make a follow-up on that. On our engagement on departments that are owing municipalities, we are told categorically that collectively municipalities are owned by Public Works, okay, which is supposed to settle and make payment with municipalities. Okay, so that's what we understand. That's what we understood. That different, you'll know that in various areas on the land, you've got magistrates courts that are using services of municipality, and magistrate courts falls under. What called Ministry of Constitutional Development and so on. But collectively, various departments, you've got hospitals and so on. And we are told that Public Works is responsible. It's the one that interacts and interface with the municipalities as they are. Okay. So that is our understanding. And that is why in the presentation we made it that we even go beyond to say we've got this amount of money that is owed to us, which is the big threat, is money that is owned by public. Okay. And we even said we are thinking about initiating a particular law which will manage the issues of write-offs. Okay. Because we believe as an association, we cannot point fingers to anybody. We've got a responsibility, and part of that responsibility is to craft something and lobby on the base of something that we have crafted. Okay. So I think that is our process insofar as this issue is concerned. Yes, I agree that capacity building is not one of thing. It's a continuous journey, and it will never end because yesterday you have managed to train two or three individuals. And therefore capacity is over. And that is why earlier on I was saying, Chair, the kernel of the question, it was the first question. The first question says to us, do you think if you run a business, at the business level, your business is sustainable when your tax base is seriously eroded. Okay. And we're locating that with the financial capacity of a municipality to perform its duty and have ability to intervene and train those that have lesser capacity. And that is why we are lobbying COGTA, that is why we are lobbying Treasury, that is why we are lobbying so-and-so, so that come play the role that you're supposed to role in supporting the municipalities in terms of Section 154 of the Constitution.
I think we covered most of the questions. Just the one quick one, the issue of the maintenance of infrastructure. That issue is really an issue of concern. And we know that when the Minister of Finance did the budget speech, he talked about the game changers. And one of the game changers was 8% of every municipality's budget should go towards contributing to the infrastructure, to the maintenance of infrastructure. In every municipality. The challenge that we have, Chair, and this is the point that we wanted to raise, when you get the infrastructure grants from National Treasury, those grants are specifically for new projects or for new builds. It's not for the maintenance of it. So the point that, so the one thing I want to say is that almost every municipality if you go to, they will have an infrastructure maintenance plan. The plan will be there. The challenge is the money, because maintenance means money. So on paper, yes, its plans are there. They may even have provisions for it, if you want to call it accounting provisions, but the physical hard cash is not there. And unfortunately, maintenance, you've got to have money to back it up. It can't just be an accounting entry in the books. It has to be real hard money. And that's where the challenge you face. So the reason is, Chair, again, it's budgeted for sometimes, but again, if you don't collect what you're supposed to collect, if certain things don't happen have as you plan them to happen, in reality you're not going to have the actual physical money to be able to do the maintenance. And one of the things we also looking at in Gauteng together, it's called the Gauteng City Region Project. They're looking at a study specifically in terms of the infrastructure maintenance backlog, what is the actual gap. But they're doing it for a limited sample. And I think once the study comes out, I think we can use some of the principles to do something on a wider scale. I foresee it's going to be quite a large number, but my worry is that I don't know how we're going to be able to fund it, because obviously these things have to be funded. You've got to be able to spend that money to put those, because it talks to the matter you also raise of the aging infrastructure, which, you know, the pipes underground, etc., because all of that is linked into that maintenance plan. And if the money isn't found to deal with those things, it can't be dealt with appropriately.
Okay, I do want us to wrap up this discussion, so I will give members their very, very last bite on this one, because indeed we have to wrap up. I know you asked to be excused, and I asked you to leave, you know, but indeed we can't keep you here because of this other, we're going to go to the MCOT. So I'm going to release you now, but as we proceed, but this round is the final round on the presentation. Thank you very much. Honourable Member
Tabata, Honourable
Member
Banana. Chair, I do want to ask this clarity. I hear the response which says that when money is allocated, it's usually for new projects, infrastructure projects, and none for infrastructure, for maintenance. And if that is the case, then it becomes a problem. I want to ask whether you do engage those who allocate money, National Treasury, even ourselves as this committee dealing with the division of revenue, so that you are able to then identify that 8% from the allocated funds, because it does not make sense that at a national level you're told we are only allocating this money for new infrastructure, at the same time The same national level says 8% for maintenance. And that 8% cannot be dependent on the amount of revenue you are able to collect. If that is the situation, then we have a serious problem, which I think can be addressed and can be resolved. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm back to the departments owing to the municipalities. We once received a list of many departments that are owing municipalities. But now the answer from the member of the NEC is different, is saying the public works. Even then, we still want those departments and the public works so that as this committee, we can engage them. We've been talking about this as if we don't want to solve this issue. It's nice to repeat it now and again, and it's not resolved. The other issue, Chairperson, we are talking about departments owing municipalities. But there are private sector people who are owing municipalities. It is high time now that we need to know, even them, those who are owing the municipalities, so that we can have engagement. How are they supposed to pay the municipalities? Thank you very much.
Municipalities for this. Because in terms of the MTDTS budget, MTDTS budget, there's money that has been redirected for this. So what is being done to prepare? Because if nothing is being done to prepare and also the schools monitoring on the actual implementation of the usage of this budget, come end of the financial year, this money will not be spent, and guess what? National Treasury might cut the budget due to poor performance. As the implications would be, maybe you did not need this money, and then it is then redirected to other, anti-budget activities. But also, you are saying, you are proposing that National Treasury separate the urban settlement development grant and the human settlement upgrade grant. Right, have I understood you correctly? Now, are you not worried that this would increase the proliferation of conditional grants? This is something that also FSC have cautioned against. Then I think I'll go on to another. Over to you, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. So maybe let me start with the issue of the first point about the maintenance of infrastructure. And I think, thank you, Member, for raising the point. So I think the point you've raised is the crux of the matter, that currently the 8% requirement is just a norm. But the point is it's based on, so the way that the fiscal architecture currently is set up is that Treasury will not fund the maintenance of infrastructure. That has to come from operations, and hence is dependent on revenue. So we concur with you that it is a challenge, because we know that the revenue raising assumptions, etc., are not always possible and not always attainable, and hence we're having the challenge we're currently having. So we've put proposals to Treasury when we've had discussions with them to say, can't we then look that instead of giving a full 100% grant just for new infrastructure projects, that we can have a portion of that maybe 28%, whatever it may be, but a portion of those grants to deal then with maintenance and another portion for new builds and new projects, etc. Their argument has been to say no. The way they foresee it is they will assist with the building of the infrastructure, creation of infrastructure. Thereafter, the municipality, out of normal operations, must maintain, renew, and run the infrastructure. And that has been their standpoint all the time along the way. So we feel that, yes, we need to then further interrogate this matter in terms of that one. So that's the issue with regards to that one. The issue with regards to departments within the municipalities, where the DPW matter came in was National Treasury, together with COCTA, requested the Department of Public Works to undertake an exercise where they engaged with departments throughout the country to verify the amounts that were owing to them, because in most cases, they are the custodians of public buildings in the provinces, or, you know, in terms of how it works, from what we understand. So there was an exercise, and we've had numerous engagements. There was a task team, and one of the things that they did very well was they actually were able to take the amounts that were showing as reflected owed by government departments to municipalities, and they were able to then verify, because in some cases there were disputes with meter readings, with billings, etc. And what they were then able to do is to say, out of the amount that was initially reflected, how much of it was verified. They were then also able to get signed off by both the municipality and the corresponding department, where they agreed, this is how much we owe you. The point where we're at now is, that exercise has been done, so we actually have a figure to say, this is how much is owed to municipalities, that's been verified, agreed to, etc. But again, what needs to happen now is a payment needs to take place. And when we've engaged with Treasury, Treasury is saying that there isn't any further funding available. So one of the things we've been saying is, like, when municipalities owe ESCOM and water boards, they make them enter into payment agreements to say, pay this debt off, whether it's 3 years, 5, whatever it may be, but pay it off according to your affordability, and that's how you can settle the debt. So we say that, why don't we have a similar arrangement for government departments? Because we understand it may be difficult to pay all at once, because it may have been accumulated over a number of years. They've got the money allocated for specific projects as well, but surely we can have a payment plan in terms of that. But to be very honest, over the last 6 months or so, there's been very little movement in terms of getting the actual payment of that money to municipalities. The verification exercise is done. It's now the next step, and it hasn't happened. So that is an issue that we need to definitely look at, because municipalities aren't getting their pay. To give you one specific example, we had a situation in the Free State province where the metro, Mangaung, was actually put into a difficult situation with the water board, because the government departments weren't footing their bill to the extent that Bloom Water, which is the water board that deals with Mangaung, actually then throttled the supply of water to the municipality, and the residents obviously are impacted. We then had to facilitate a meeting between SALGA, the HOD for finance the MEC for finance in the province, together with the mayor of the metro, etc. And then we said to say, listen, yeah, how can we then resolve this, you know, via intergovernmental relations platforms, rather than the other option was for the mayor to then cut off electricity and do all sorts of other credit control things, which is not ideal in an intergovernmental space. But again, there was a very big reluctance we could see in terms of those meetings for them to say that, you know, you are Treasury, you have the ability to say, let's cut a slice, give it to the municipality, and we give the rest to you as the department. But they weren't willing to look at those suggestions as well. So the challenge that we face as SALGA is that government acknowledges that there is money owed to municipalities, but there seems to be a reluctance to find suitable ways to actually do the payment, and that's something we need to work on. We do have the details. We'll be able to share it with you. We've got per province, the amount owed per department, etc. We've got all of that information. We can share with the committee that we can do. The other point regarding the businesses owing to municipalities, we agree. If you're running business in a municipal environment, you should be paying your municipal services. The challenge we face there, Che, is that in some cases, again, there are instances where there are disputes. So the one point we always try to raise with our municipalities is, let's get the basics right and let's not give customers a chance to not pay. So as long as we're doing what we should be doing from our side as municipalities, then hopefully we expect that they should pay. And if not, then credit control needs to be exercised stringently, especially for businesses, because if you're in a municipal environment, running business, making profits, then surely you must contribute and pay your fair share as well. Then the last one, Che, the issue of the informal settlement upgrade grant, and also the issue where we're proposing the new grant. I do agree, it sounds a bit counterproductive, because there is currently a rationalization of grants process underway at National Treasury. But even with regards to that, there is sometimes a need to make sure that certain grants are, like this one is the one specifically. The informal settlement upgrade grant, there was always a requirement as part of the USDG for a portion of that money to be used for informal settlement upgrades. But unfortunately, because it wasn't clearly set out as a separate grant or clearly set out as a separate requirement, or it didn't have the standout, if you want to call it, in many cases, municipalities never fulfilled that obligation. They spent the money, they spent the USDG, they did the urban settlement upgrades, but they didn't always have the fulfill the requirement of the informal settlement upgrade. So in terms of getting the municipalities ready for this, I must be honest, Chair, I can't give you a proper definite yes or no. There's another unit at SALGA, the Infrastructure Services Unit, that actually deals with this grant specifically and informs and works with the municipalities in terms of capacitating them with regards to infrastructure or the USDG and human settlements issues. And they would be better placed, but from my side, I'm not sure.
Well, thank you very much. Now we have come to the end of this engagement. Indeed, I would like to take this opportunity and thank the honorable member for the vigorous engagement on your presentation. But also, I would like to thank you for this presentation that has triggered the type of response that you got from the Indeed, he talked to real local government issues, and those issues that matter most. And if they are addressed, I think they can give us a turnaround in terms of the local government budget expenditure. The committee notes various interventions, but as far as municipalities must be effectively trained and capacitated so that they good governance, sound financial management, and service. Again, infrastructure maintenance and development is very, very important for economic growth and job creation. We would also want you to consider those gaps, including the fiscal gaps, and then we plug into it. And then, so we can see the better capacity of the municipality that we'll be able to get out the money that we have to do our activity. Well, at this committee, we want to thank you once more, and we will follow up on all the issues that were raised in this action. On that increase of the allocation from the National Treasury, you see that gap, non-performance, but you want increase. You know, it doesn't motivate, it does not give National Treasury, it's not convincing to National Treasury that if they give you this money, it will be best used, you know, for service delivery. So you need to also bring an improvement in terms of the performance. I still want to know what will be the reaction of National Treasury, because I know it did not respond to everyone. I'm not that you didn't consult with National Treasury, but it's fine. We can still talk about it. What will be there? Because I think they will take care of it. But with the 9%, it's still not performance. We need more money, which is more, you know, but it's fine. But thank you so much. Yeah, we are done.
Shall we concentrate? Shall we focus so that we can finish and allow members to go? Members have just indicated they've got other meetings and they want to go, so I need this quorum desperately. So thank you very much. Shall we then consider the minutes? I have here the minutes of the 16th. We have the minutes of the 17th, 23rd, and 25th. Let's start with the minutes of the 16th. These minutes were circulated. My assumption is that members have read the minutes.
Are there any corrections?
Yes, sir.
Page 1?
Page 1. There will be 10 in that meeting. Miss Nakopo is supposed to be number 5.
Oh, yeah.
Who?
Nakopo.
Which one? Oh, yeah, I see. Okay. Portfolio Committee on Basic Education co-opted. Okay. All right. No, that's fine. Thank you very much. Do you accept that correction?
Sorry.
Accepted. Thank you very much. Shall we then move to page 2? Are there any corrections?
Yes, on 3. Paragraph 3.
Paragraph 3.
The deadline, very beginning of deadline, that end.
Yeah.
That should be removed.
Do you agree? Agreed? If you don't agree, then you know me, but I'll then start to make that mistake. All right, okay, fine, agreed. Shall we then move on to page 3? Any corrections on page 3? Any proposal for adoption of the meetings as a true reflection of what transpired in the previous meeting? Honourable Members Nukonyane and Honourable Member Manana, second. Thank you very much. Shall we move to the next set of minutes of the 17th of October? These minutes were also circulated on time, and I want to believe that members gave themselves time to peruse through. Shall we then consider the correctness of the minutes? Page 1? Any correction? None. Page 2? Any correction? None. Page 3? Honourable Member McLaughlin?
6.4. It should just be in order to highlight the areas, not highlight the areas.
Okay.
Page
3, ne? Okay.
Page 3, 6.4.
Okay. Alright. Yes. Agreed? Agreed.
Agreed.
Okay, thank you very much. We will then move to the next. Come again? Okay. Oh, yeah, you're right. Any proposal for adoption, Honourable Member Matthews, any seconder? Honourable Member Manan. We move to the third set of minutes.
So, Chairperson, I was not there.
Okay, Honourable Member McLaughlin has seconded. Thanks. So, shall we then move to the minutes of the...
I'm sorry to take you back to paragraph 5.
Of what?
Of the same minutes. Just suggest that that last part of that last sentence should... I suggest it forms part of the resolution. I don't know whether we should leave it at that or we should take it to... I thought for...
Follow-up purposes. Where are you? 6.4.
Yeah,
this last. Yeah, the last.
Yes.
So that it becomes
6.5.
Yeah, okay. So what are we, what's your take? Agreed?
What is the issue? The summary and the addendum 6.6.
I'm saying on paragraph 5, summary of committee resolution, I'm suggesting that last sentence be crafted into a resolution on paragraph 5, which says, after deliberating on the matter, it was agreed that more information be obtained on the aforementioned matter before the committee took a final decision on to invite Parliament to account. Would it be correct to put it in the resolution?
Yeah.
Or should we leave it at the minute?
6.5.
More information.
Yes.
We are agreeing with
you. You know, can I recraft this sentence? Sandy? This sentence, can we recraft it? It has agreed that information be obtained on the aforementioned matter before a final decision is taken to invite Parliament to account. Before a final decision, or before a decision is taken to, I think a decision is taken to invite Parliament to account. Okay. So there's a proposal that we then shift it to make it a 5 under
6.5.
Yeah, 6.5, yes. Agreed? Agreed. I know we had already adopted the minutes. Now, of late, the committee has challenges. After adoption, we still go back. Now, I'll appreciate that in future we really, really, really follow the procedure to the letter. Let's not violate this program. Once the matter is adopted, if there's something else, I think we must be timely in terms of our intervention. These are good interventions, but I'm saying they cannot come after we've adopted the minutes. It's not procedural. All right. Minutes of the 23rd of October? These minutes were circulated and members have read the minutes, and the assumption is that members have read the minutes. Shall we then look at page 1? Any corrections? Page 2? Page 3, and then page 4, all right. Any proposal for adoption of the minutes? Honourable Member Martins, Honourable Member Manala, second. Indeed, we're doing very well here. So we're now on the fourth set of minutes of the 25th of October 2018. The assumption is that members have read the minutes. Shall we consider the correctness of the minutes? Page 1? Page 2? Page 3, page 4, page 5. Now, I just want to find out something.
I have page 6.
Okay, there's corrections on page 6. You may come in.
Start the end of the third line of 3.3.
3.3? Third line?
If we remove that apostrophe, the committee, it should read the committee sought clarity on the configuration.
Okay, thank you very much.
And 3.5, right at the beginning of the last line, of nationally raised revenue.
Okay. Agreed? Agreed. All right. It's just a procedural matter. Where we've had a joint meeting, I'd like to know from our staff if they have consulted with the other secretariats of the other committees and there's agreement on the minutes.
Yes,
so that was done. Okay, then I'm happy. Thank you very much. Shall we then propose for the adoption of this minute? Honourable Member McLaughlin. Well, Honourable Members, any announcements? It's any? Okay. All right. Any announcements? Any announcements? Any correspondence? None. All right. The meeting stands adjourned. Thank you very much for your participation. I'm told that there is no meeting on Friday. You must be happy with that. Right? Happy?
Yeah.